right. Well, hey, thanks everybody for tuning in. This is Outside the Panels. Tonight, we're doing a special evening with Dave Dwanch and Brockton McKinney. And we're going to talk about some comic books and some Kickstarters. We're going to have ourselves a damn good time. We're a little short on co-hosts this week, so it's me and my buddy Jack. Say hello, Jack.
Hey, how's it going, guys?
All right. And thank you two for coming on the show tonight. We really appreciate it. You guys want to introduce yourselves real quick?
Yeah, that's Brockton McKinney over there. He's a dashing son of a bee. He's written some stuff like M Theory, some Full Moon Entertainment movies. He cuts videos for Bad Idea. I almost said Bad Robot, which I was like, oh, that's the dream. And he's written for Mad Magazine, and he has blessed me as my co-writer on Jenny Zero.
And then you've got Dave Dwanch, who has written such amazing things as Double Jumpers and Cyrus Perkins, and was the creative director at Action Lab, the guy who got everything going over there. And he is also the co-writer on the book Jenny Zero. Plus, he has a new book that's a follow-up to Prom of the Dead, which was an amazing book that just came out, and he's got a Kickstarter going for that right now, and it's called Broken Circle.
So we're all on video right now, and I swear if I wasn't so brown, you could see me blushing right now, but I mask it very well with this dark complexion. So yeah, but Brock and I have been friends for a long, long time, and we've been drinking buddies from the get-go, and I think that's how we came up with Jenny Zero. It was originally called Party Monster. I actually keep having to correct myself. We've done
I gotta ask, have you seen the movie Party Monster?
I have not, but that was why that Dark Horse made us change it. They were like, do you want to be attached to a Macaulay Culkin vehicle? And we were like, maybe not this one.
It's a crazy fucking movie. You should definitely watch it. it's very different from from your
guys. Yeah, I was like, I don't think anybody's going to confuse this Macaulay Culkin, which is a great movie, with this kaiju killing Lush. You know, I was like, I don't think that's the same.
Very, very different content matter.
That comic, guys, I am super excited for it. I've been telling... I've been worried that that Dave's going to think I'm a crazy person because I just keep retweeting about his Kickstarter. As a purely selfish, I just want the fucking comic. You guys seem like really good guys, but I got to get that volume too, man. Because Prom of the Dead, I like saying it, and I know it's not appropriate, but Prom of the Dead fucked. It fucked hard. It was good. It was fun and it was crazy. Your backlog that you were kind enough to send me is just really phenomenal. But we're here to talk mainly about Jenny Zero. So I guess we could maybe kick it off there. How did this happen? Like, it is crazy.
I guiltily challenged Brockton McKinney to a drinking contest in Puerto Rico. We went to Puerto Rico. It's one of my favorite shows is the Puerto Rico Comic Con. And I tell all of the pros that I know to go out there, hang out. It's just a small island community that loves comics, and they're just crazy for it. And I was like, Brockton, you're going to be a star. We got to go. So Brockton, we made it into a trip. We brought our wives. We went for a beer run. We locked ourselves out of our apartment, and the apartment was walled. Like a lot of the apartments in Puerto Rico have large walls so that to keep out the bad people. And it was keeping out the good people. So we just wound up sitting on the curb, drinking a case of beer, talking about what we wanted to do in comics. And then Brockton came up with the idea of like a kaiju killing girl. He wanted to do a monster book. And I was like, what about gigantism? Dudes like giant women, right? And Brockton was like, maybe.
I was in from the good to go. You were like, yeah, well, she gets gigantic and then she can smash into buildings and stuff. And maybe it's, not to spoil anything, but maybe there's something in her past that she didn't know about. And I was like, yes. And then we were pretending like we were monsters and throwing beer cans at each other and acting out the scenes. We were like, and then what if it was like this? And then, oh no. And then somebody gets shot and then it's falling. We were doing lots of stuff that made it into that first issue we acted out at 2 a.m. on the streets of Puerto Rico.
Oh, and like, I mean,
what
like,
a fun
honestly,
way to write a book.
It's, yeah, it's, and that's the thing, like, inspiration comes in many, many forms, but like, I feel like Jenny was the purest form of 2 12-year-old drunks running around in the streets. And like, it was fun. It was fun because like, Brock would come up with a really great idea. And then I'd come up with like, oh yeah, well, what about that? And then Brock's like, well, what about this? Like the Nemo, the gun, right? The gun that she's got. Oh. It's like this, like a live baby monster that wraps around her arm. And then, you know, spoilers, when she grows, it becomes like a finger gun. And so like, she can use it all the time, but it only really responds to her because it thinks it's her mom. And like, we were just like, he's like, what about a kaiju gun? I was like, what about when she grows, it becomes a finger cannon? And he's like, what if it's a baby? And I was like, oh my God, we're just like, wait. I mean, I felt like two oddly focused Grant Morrisons just running around drunk. It was a lot of fun.
It was wild. And it was, and then the next morning during the hangovers, we wrote it all down. We sat and we had like 2 seats at 1 table. We had a single laptop and I would type while we were going back over everything and my head was killing me and we were just getting it all down. And then as soon as we were done, Dave was like, scoot over. We got to find an artist. And I was like, right now? It's like 10 in the morning. And then he was like, yeah, dude, let's do it. He went on there and like within minutes, he was like, what about this guy? I like this guy's stuff. And it's the artist of the book, Magenta King, who I'd never heard of. We'd never heard of, but his stuff was so phenomenal that we were like, all right, he's our number one and we'll make a list, but we'll try him first.
Right. And then like then we finished the case of beer and then we like walked over to the convention. I think we still had 2 days left at that time. And like, I think I texted him, I messaged him on Instagram. I was like, hey buddy, we got this book. It's about this. And the pitch was, it's real simple pitch. It's like literally like daughter of an Ultraman like character who's just famous for being famous. Like imagine if Captain America had a daughter and she's just a complete shithead. And she's just riding on that fame. And then imagine if that Captain America character martyred himself to save the world. And so now she's just living in the shadow of like this godlike being, but she remembers him as a shitty dad. So it's like, there's a lot of push pull in that. And so like when we pitched it to him, he instantly said yes. And we were like, well, we're off to the races. And literally we typed in kaiju on Instagram, started scrolling through. I said, that guy right there. And that's the guy that wound up on the book.
The art is beautiful. I'm really into like giant robots, giant monsters. So like I'm easy to please here, right? I'm an easy lay in this genre. Like, but you guys impressed the shit out of me. That the whole motif of like emerging out from under her father's shadow, and then when we find out like, because they mentioned like this giant shadow and then you find out that there's like this power in this family. And that last page, man, like,
oh yeah,
I was not expecting that. But just to like the way you guys kick it off, is she gets this phone call and it's like, Jenny, you have to save the world. And she like throws all these pills in her mouth and downs some Jack. And I was like, this is the hero I can get behind. And she's just cool. Like,
yeah, that's literally just like a blue-haired punk popping Molly at the club, and that yeah. has to save the world while drunk.
What's rad too is our colorist, Megan, she is an artist in her own right. She's amazing. She would have been my second choice for artist of that book. Like, you look up Megan Wong's stuff, she's awesome. But we did a lot of color design on that book. So like when Jenny's in her apartment, it's all blues and grays. And whenever she's out in the world, it's all oranges and yellows. And whenever she's in the club, it's all that neon craziness. And the only thing that ties all that together is that bright blue hair. And so you see this like bouncing ball of blue throughout all of the pages. And it's really fun to watch. And we definitely have more stories to tell, because as we started writing this thing, it grew, no pun intended, like so big. It was insane. And then we were like, let's throw some Shogun Warriors in there, man. Let's like the kaiju aspect is awesome. There's like Yakuza, there's going to be Shaolin monks. There's like, it's a kaiju death cult. It's like fucking nuts. It's the craziest book. Yeah.
I'm excited to see like more of the backstory too. And like some explanations to some of the crazy shit that just gets thrown in our lap.
Sure. Yeah.
That was the thing too. It was like, yeah. we we had all this crazy stuff, and then we had to go back as we put everything together. We were like, well, why this? Why is it like that? Why, you know, why, what? Her dad's a shitty dad. And originally, like, her dad was just a shitty dad. And then the more we worked on him, we were like, no, that's just like her perception of him, you know, like, and maybe like he has these good parts about him too. And of course he did, because he's like a hero, right? Or maybe he doesn't. And the more we started rounding out those characters, the more we were like, oh, damn, there's a whole nother story about her father that we have to tell concurrently with this story, with Jenny's story, in order for you to understand where Jenny is and why these things are happening to her. And the people that she's getting ready to meet, because like her father had best friends and stuff that are still alive. She's about to like run into those people and she's like, I don't really give a fuck about you. And they're like, yeah, but we care about you. So it gets real cool and real deep and in just a little bit.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, there's definitely layers in your guys' narrative. As a premier issue, I've read, I'm not like the comic master, but I have a pretty decent like library and I read a lot of comics. And your guys' premier issue, it hits all the buttons. And it, you know, we get this very intriguing character. Instantaneously, we want to know more about her. We want to know more about this past, her party lifestyle. She's got this publicist. She's got this very intriguing backstory. And then also she's like really good at like that. She says, she's like, I'm really good at killing shit. And I was like, yeah, you are. Like, so, I mean, the art, the story, the character, like you're just nailing like criteria after criteria of a really great premiere issue. And I apologize to listeners, but spoiler alert, man, that last fucking panel, that full splash, I was not expecting that. Like, I was kind of like, okay, maybe she'll have powers. Like, what's going on? And then like, what, this dude's shooting at her. And then, man, you turn the page. And that's one of the beautiful things about comics is that page turn. You know, those really good.
Yep. And the reveal.
Dude, you guys got it. You guys got that shit. Like, on the...
Check I was reading out. The digital copy, and so I couldn't tell how far I was to the end, and I see that page, and I'm like, oh, fuck, and I'm like, shit, it's over. What's going to happen next? Like, when's the next issue coming out? Like, that's a good sign, I'd say.
So I'm sharing the screen, and this is just for you guys, but here are the covers to the next few issues, and unfortunately, you know, built for radio or whatever, it is not going to, there's so many versions of these. I'm just kind of scrolling through. But yeah, I mean, it's definitely going to become something more than it is even in this first issue. You know what I mean? Like it's going to go deep into the history of it. And then, you know, the Action Science Police is like one of my favorite parts in this book. And it's kind of like the secret age. It's like SHIELD for, you know, Japanese culture of kaiju fighters. And we built a whole backstory to them. And it was like, oh man, when are we going to be able to tell that story? And so the first arc of Jenny was going to be 5 issues. And the fifth issue, we were so excited about it. We were like, it's all about Mega Commander Zero. It's all about her dad, all about his motivations. It was going to be a standalone issue that was put at the end of this. And then Dark Horse was like, you know, it really doesn't fit the narrative that you're telling in this first arc. We were just so excited about it that we were like, well, we'll put it in the second arc. And then hopefully we'll get like our own kind of BPRD spinoff off of that. And then just be able to tell all of the stories from the 60s, 70s and 80s that we want to tell. Cause there's just so much more.
Yeah. The Action Science Police has a huge, it was fun because like, even we wrote the first issue in like a week. We shot like 5 pages back and forth, like just over and over again. It was real quick to get everything done. And then once we had it, we started like expanding out and saying like, all right, well, who are the Action Science Police? Like what's their motivation? What have they got going on? Let's figure that stuff out. And then even little things like you were mentioning the publicist, Dana, and we were like, oh, let's really like figure out this Dana. Why is Dana her publicist? Like, why does she put up with her shit? Are, you know, and they ended up, we were like, they're best friends. And we're writing them because each of us has been the Dana and each of us has been the lives where one person's had to like deal with the other person, you know, drunkenly dragging them down the street to get them to home or whatever. So it was like, that was a super fun dynamic when we were like, oh, her publicist is her best friend. Now we totally know how to write these characters.
Right. And it's fun too, because Jenny, we're kind of ambiguous about how old she is. And that's kind of part of ties into some of the other elements that we don't want to really give away just quite yet, but she's definitely three, four years older than Dana, but she definitely doesn't act like it. Like Dana is her big sister. And
yeah. Yeah. Good God. There's a timeline that we created that gives me a headache just looking at it. It was like,
oh, Lord.
Because we were like, how far? We kept going back and going like, okay, well, we're in the 90s now, but do we have to go back further? Yeah, because we're talking about her dad. Okay, well, let's do the 80s. All right, we're doing the 80s. We have to go back. Well, I mean, technically, yeah, because he would be 70s when he started. We were like, holy shit. So there is a timeline starting in the 70s for Jenny Zero that goes up to present. It has the dog's age in it. Like, there's like, it tells how old the dog like, it's important. We knew there was these things in the story that we had to tell, and that people would say like, well, why? How could that dog still be there? Or how's this going on? We were like, it all lines up. I swear to God, it's like a calculator. We've done this thing so many times to make sure that like everything works right. And it was like, that made it. And you could always go back to that and reference it, where you're like, all right, shit. All right. So we're talking about, you know, Dana and Jenny when they first met. So what year is that? And how old are they? How old's the dog? How old's his dad? All that stuff was like sitting in there, and you're plugging it all in. And it made, again, it's a real headache maker, but like it made for like a really great way to write the story because you had that reference.
I love the fact that you can go from throwing beer cans in the streets and pretending to be giant dinosaur monsters to meticulously planning this super complicated timeline.
Our writing method was really strange on this too. Like Brock said, we wrote this first issue in like 5 days. And how we did that was we created a Google Doc. We knew what the beats were going to be. Like, I think I wrote out all the beats for the first issue. I was like, this is what's happening, right? And then Brock started filling it in. He's like, Dave, I wrote 5 pages today. I was like, yeah, I'll write 5 pages today too, motherfucker. So then I would go in, edit his stuff, write 5 pages. Then he would do the same thing. And so by the time 3 days went by, we had a whole script and we hit all the beats. And then we went back and refined it after we brainstormed more. So like we were fleshing it out along the way. And then after it was all said and done, you know, COVID happened. This book was supposed to come out at San Diego Con last year. And we were planning on that. We were like, all right, we're going to hit it big. We're going to hit San Diego and just crush it. And then COVID crushed everybody. And so they put us on hold, which is probably a good thing, because then we went back and edited it again after we had broken out the lore a little bit and we were already starting to work on the second volume. So it just got tighter and tighter, but it was really loosey-goosey at the way we were writing it at first.
That's it. It's like write drunk, edit sober. That's like,
yeah. This first issue isn't coming out till May, right?
April.
April 14th.
April. Oh, okay. So that's coming out soon. And then what's the release schedule look like after that for the...
It's monthly. Yeah, we've had this thing done for so long. The second volume, we haven't even gotten a green light, but we wanted to get out ahead of it. So we just started working on it. And Magenta is amazing, but his page, the amount of effort it takes for him to put out a page, because they're so amazing, it takes him a long time to get those pages back to us. So we just wanted to start early. Yeah, and they're even better now. I mean, he's doing some crazy shit in the second volume, man.
On the cover for like 5.
Oh yeah. I think I did, but let's.
I got it right.
Yeah, all those pages or the covers you were going through on screen.
Right, share,
awesome.
Yeah, sucks for you listeners because you don't get to see this awesome shit.
Oh, I got it. I got it.
Yeah, I saw that one. That one's badass. That's
yeah.
The cover for 5, the most dangerous woman on earth.
Like, yeah, the first thing when I opened it and started reading, like the first few pages, my first big question was who that organization was.
Oh, the Action Science Police? Yeah.
Yes, the Action Science Police, that's it.
Yeah.
ASP.
Really worked hard on that stuff. That felt like, it got so fun working on what they were that it just kept splitting off in these contingents and like who were their main guys and what was happening. And we ended up like creating like brand new characters just to be a part of the Action Science Police, because we were like, God, it's so cool that these guys exist and they're doing this. And if they've been around, you know, since the 70s, like, what's the different incarnations been, and like, what's happened within those groups? So there's a ton of that stuff coming up as well.
Yeah, there's basically an extraterrestrial event that forces Japan to create the Action Science Police to research what's going on. And then as time goes on, they become a militant group that then starts using kaiju for their own tech. And that's how Nemo the Gun came about. And then we get deeper into some of that fun stuff a little later.
Guys, I'm not going to lie to you. All this, the covers you're showing us and the things you're saying, like, the hairs are standing up on the back of my neck. It's, like, I was so impressed with this, and I love it so much. It's crazy to me that you guys mentioned this was supposed to come out a year ago, because I kind of thought it was timed. If you look at what's going on right now, a few months ago, Marvel finished up their Ultraman mini. Image has Ultra Mega coming out. Aftershock has Kaiju Score coming out. We've got Godzilla versus fucking Kong coming out. And it's, so it's like, man, kaijus are, you know, they're big. They're very popular right now. I mean, I guess they always are, but we're just getting a lot of it right now.
Yeah.
So I was kind of like, huh, like, that's, I was like, here's this, like, at this perfect time. So I guess, I mean, COVID fucking sucks, but that kind of worked out. And I mean,
it did kind of work out. Yeah. I think we were both, and always have been, big, just like, not just kaiju fans, but big robots, big mechs, anything. We like that kind of stuff. So we had always said when we, because we've worked together, you know, for a decade, and we've always, but we haven't gotten to work on a book like what we co-wrote it. We've been like, one person was helping the other person do whatever it was. And this was the first time that we were like, oh damn, dude, we weren't even looking for this. We were sitting on a curb in Puerto Rico and this stuff started to happen. We were like, I think that's our book, you know? And it was, and it happened to be kaijus and big, of course it did, kaijus and big robots. Both of us, like, most of the toys in our house are big robots and kaiju or whatever. So it would have been great if it had come out when it was supposed to, but it does kind of feel like synchronicity that it happened right now when people are like maybe more interested in like these big monsters and stuff like that.
Right, but now, kaijus are huge.
Yeah, we're not smart enough to point.
Yeah, no, unintended. Sorry, that was bad.
We did come up with this, I think, in 2017 or 18. Was it 17 or 18, Brock? It's been a while.
You're
sorry, bud.
Every time I go to Puerto Rico to do that show, I have the best time. And then I'm also like, what year? What? We were there for a week? Was that the time we were there for 2 weeks? Was that the time we went to the crazy bar and got the giant downpour of rain? Or is that the time that we got lost on the street? You know, there's like, I don't, I'm Swiss cheese up here, man. It's gone. Gone.
Likewise.
Yeah, so yeah, hopefully, you know, like I said, I mean, it seems like Dark Horse was really behind it. They made it returnable, which they never make anything returnable. And that's a good sign. That means that they have faith that no one's going to return this book, right? You don't do that unless you think you're going to sell out. So, you know, and I don't know, we've hit the pavement pretty hard on this one, Brock. And everyone that we've talked to, every retailer is like, we're already really aware of this book. We're already ordering it. You didn't even need to call. And we're like, that's the first time for me. I've been in comics for a long ass time. And, you know, to be able to call stores and have them already recognize what you're working on is a really good feeling.
Yeah.
I don't see any reason this shouldn't do great.
Yeah. Well, fingers crossed.
Yeah.
Dirty secret to the whole thing is, let's just say you buy the book and you're like, I hate this story. You're still going to love the art because Magenta King and Megan kill it. That is like some of the most beautiful looking like depictions of, you know, giant monsters and destruction that you've ever seen. You're crazy. That one big splash page of them in the club or whatever, I'm like, oh my God, like, it's just beautiful. So that's the thing, is I feel like even with retailers, they were like, I don't know who these guys are, but damn, the book looks pretty, so I'm gonna, you know, gonna buy it. And I think that people will feel the same way. You get it for the art. I think you're gonna love the story, but otherwise, you're just going to be like, I don't know, man. Let me tear out some of these pages and frame them because they're gorgeous.
Yeah, well, I mean, like, you come for the art, stay for the story, right?
Yeah. Yeah, no, you come on the art and fall asleep to the story. Is that right? Oh. Yeah. No, but, you know, the funny thing is like the way I pitched this book too, I didn't pitch it like a normal person would pitch this book. I just walked around like a convention. I think it was Rose City in Portland with my phone. And I was just like going to editors being like, hey, take a look at this artwork, and just showing them the book. And then, you know, you could tell when an editor is into something, because they'll then ask you, well, what's it about, right? Then I told Brett over at Dark Horse what it was about. And he was like, that's really awesome. He's like, but what's going to really make this book sell is this artwork. So you nailed it right on the head, Brock. I mean, we are very lucky to find Magenta and to contact him through Instagram of all things, right? Like, most people go to like DeviantArt, and I hate DeviantArt. It's like the hardest place to search for anyone. So like, I'm on Insta all the time and trying to find great artists to promote or to work with.
I mean, that issue one cover is so great too. Just her in the footprint with all the drugs and beer cans and booze and stuff. I mean, it's just, you can't ignore it. I mean, if you see that on the shelf, you see it advertised online, like, I know Dark Horse has posted some tweets about it. We've been posting tweets about it. But I mean, it's just it catches you. Like, it's just like, whoa. And just the whole premise of, like, you know, the everybody's talking about, she's this like classic fuck up druggie, but is also this superhero. Like, I think the world needs more of that, because they're not perfect. Like,
yeah. Yeah. That was, that's the thing too. Thank you for saying that, the night that we were out on the street and locked out, the way we got back in was, Dave was like, I think I can climb that wall. And I was like, I'm sitting there drinking. I was like, I don't think you can, but I do think you can. Please try it. And he just jumped up and like scaled it like some kind of parkour ninja, landed on the other side, unlocked the gate, and was like, and then what if her gun? And I was like, the fuck was that? I was like, that was so cool. Like, that's like, I was like, the unassumed drunk hero. That's a cool angle, man. Maybe we, you know, that kind of thing. So that actually happened that night. And I was like, we got to, like, I mean, that was, I don't think you realized how cool you were doing that. And I don't think
punk rock.
Jenny's not doing it to be cool. She's doing it because that's just her, you know?
Yeah. Well, I was practicing that move for weeks. And then I was like, how do I get Brockton to work on a book with me? Let's lock him out of the apartment. Let's do that. Let's get wasted.
The truth comes out.
No, but it's you know, it's funny because I first got put on my radar when you submitted M-Theory to Action Lab, and I like fell in love with your writing. I fell in love with the way you write characters. The art, the concept, everything was adorable. And then like when Brockton was falling behind, I was like, fuck it, man, I'll ink it. I'll help letter it. I'll do whatever you need to get this book done. And so I worked on volume two with Brockton, and I think that was the turning point in our careers where we're like, we got to work on something together. I really want to do Lobo with Brockton. I think like if you gave Brockton and I like a Lobo or like potentially a Deadpool, I think we could get it. As long as they give us an R rating, we could do it. It would be amazing.
Dude, if you guys have a DC Black Label book, you got my fucking money already. I'll buy variants. I'll buy store variants. I'm such a slut for exclusive variants. It's bad.
That's our new quote that we're putting. I'll buy it. If they do it, they get a black label. I'm a slut for this. I'm going to do it.
Go ahead. So Dave, you letter a lot of your own stuff, right? I noticed as I was reading your backlog.
Yeah, I do. You know, a lot of that, it just comes from, I'm dirt poor, and usually I pay for my artists as well. My wife and I, we lived in a tiny house for 3 years, and our bills were very, very low when we were doing that. And so like, I was just like, fuck it, I'm going to just work on comics and put out as many as I possibly can. All these ideas are floating around my head, but I started out as an artist and then turned into a letterer, became a colorist, all of that stuff, just so that, you know, you could tell your own story. Right. And then I was like, well, now I got to hire other artists because A, I'm not very fast, and B, my style is very, very cartoony, and there isn't really much that's in my brain that translates to the pen, pencil and ink of my style. So like, you know, then I started putting out books like Cyrus Perkins and Famplets and stuff like that.
Dave can, that's the thing is like when Dwight, because I came on knowing him as a writer, but then he was like, I can draw a little bit. And he like, would be like, I'll show you. And you'd like draw. I'm like, oh shit, you can draw like crazy. I was like, man, we're sitting at tables at like these shows. And I was like, just fucking draw on the book and they'll buy it because they'll be like, it looks cool. You can do a sketch. And he was like, I don't know, what am I going to draw? I was like, a cat skeleton. Who gives a shit? Just draw. And he did it. We started selling books. He was like, oh shit. I was like, dude, I didn't know you could draw. I was like, that's amazing. He could draw, letter, color, set books, do anything. Dwanch has it. He showed me how to do stuff where he was like, yeah, you can do it like this. It'll be faster. This is how we do it. You know, we're going to put it like this and you go through and this is how you PDF it. And just like all the stuff that you don't really know, Dave had all this behind the scenes knowledge as well, which made everything like way faster.
So I've lettered a ton of Brockton's books too. And let me tell you, Brock, I love your books, but man, Brockton loves a fucking sound effect. Like you don't even know. Like, and sound effects are, you know, like lettering a comic book's easy. Lettering sound effects, that's difficult because you've got, it's almost like your every panel has a theme at that point, right? And it's got to feel original. It can't be canned. Like I can't use the same Zapow or whatever. Give me one of your sound effects, Brockton. I mean,
somebody's like, they punch them in the butt and it's like, it just says like fart punch, you know? And like that's the sound effect. It's just fart punch, but it's got, you know, it's like some big weird looking thing or whatever, or poop kickle or something like that, where it's like, I want it to be something super weird, you know, throat smack or whatever the hell it is. Like, it's almost like just what's happening as the sound effect, which I think is funny. And it turns out that Dave is like, you motherfucker, we have to redo this every time you do sound effects.
I can letter a page in like 10 minutes, but when I'm lettering a Brockton page, it's like an hour because I'm just like, I'm not going to give him some bullshit sound effects. I'm going to create sound effects for the actual titles. Like we did, it was Ginger Dead Man, right?
Dead Man, huh?
Yeah, you come out with some fucking outlandish shit in that book. And I was just like, oh, I can't believe I got to letter this. This is the craziest like thing.
Head bloosh. Anytime a head explodes, head bloosh. I was like, just, it sounds cool. It's going to look fun on the paper, you know?
Hey, fun comics, man, are underrated in my opinion. You know, like the goofy stuff, you can still tell a really great story and still impress people. We had the Metal Shark Bro guys on last week, and you guys actually remind me a lot of them. Like, you're both really funny and you're very talented, and the kind of the way you guys like did your storytelling, because they told us they wrote Metal Shark Bro as Bob was driving home from a con and had this like huge road trip ahead of him. And he called Bob and they talked for like 7 hours while he was driving and wrote it.
That's awesome. That book is so good.
It's so good. Yeah.
You guys both seem to have that them both have that dynamic where you just have like a lot of fun coming up with the ideas and getting it down. And when you're reading it, it's like fun because you can tell it was fun to create.
Yeah,
that makes sense. Yeah.
Well, so many creators get like, there's like drama. Like, I still don't really know what happened to it, but like, I'm a big Ninja Turtle nerd, and like, you know, Kevin Eastman and Peter Laird had a big falling out, and you always hear about these like really iconic comic duos where it's just like one day they're like, I'm fucking tired of your shit. And they're like, well, I'm fucking tired of your shit. And then like, it's like, what happened? Like, oh no, we lose this wonderful thing.
Yeah, why aren't you guys having fun with it? Yeah, that's the thing. It's like we really, and that was one of the reasons, because we worked on a bunch of fun stuff. Shit, man, we created the Ginger Weed Man for Full Moon. Like, it was like, that was like, I've got this thing, I got this Ginger Weed Man thing that I pitched or whatever. I was like, you want to see if you can do the designs? And Dave drew it. Dave did all the designs. Dwanch created Ginger Weed Man. And then we got to do like a little mini comic in the back of one of the ones that we did, because we were like, we picked like the Ginger Weed Man like mini comic, and they were like, yeah, do it. So we had worked together like that stuff before and had so much fun that we were like, man, if we get the chance to like, if something comes up that we can like co-write together, then I'll bet it's gonna be pretty amazing and fun. And that was exactly what happened. And it happened. It's happened. Like we're on issue 7 or 8 right now. And it's still as much fun as issue 1 was to write. We just have a good, it's like, you know,
I bet it's going to be that much fun to read then.
Yeah, I hope so.
I got it on my poll. I'm going to give a little shout out to Comics on the Green. So I live in Kansas City, Missouri. During COVID, a lot of the shops shut down. I'm a fucking bum and I live in my parents' garage, and my parents are both high risk. And so I was like, I'm not going to go to a comic book shop every Wednesday when we're in the height of this pandemic and risk this for comic books. And so I had a friend on Twitter, and she works at this Comics on the Green place in Scranton, and they started shipping me my comics. Well, now I'm spoiled because her and I talk all the time anyway. But I mean, I'll see a variant and I'll be like, can you get this for me? Or I'll copy and paste a picture into our chat. And I get, dude, they send me comic shipments 2 times a month on my paycheck. Like, they just like cater to my every fucking need. And I spend a lot of money. Like, you know, so I mean, I'm worth it a little bit. But yeah, I was like, yeah, you got to put Jenny on my pull list. And they were definitely, they were like, yep. And I've been talking you up to them too. Like, they're recommending you at their store. Like, I'm trying to get the word out, guys. Like, not just cause you were nice enough to come on the pod, but like, I was for real impressed. Dave Thanks. Sent me all his comics. And I was kind of scared for a second, cause he sent me this like PDF, you know, and I was like, they're coming on the show, and I got to read like 5 trades, and
you didn't have to read any of that shit.
I was like, well, I did, and I love, man, like, dude, Cyrus is the man. That haunted taxi cab,
yeah.
And I got to ask you, because you mentioned on Twitter that was based on a true story, and I've been like waiting in anticipation to get this story from you.
So it's a fucked up story. So I went home early from work one day, and I thought, oh man, I think I got like food poisoning or whatever, right? And so I'm like, yeah, I need to just fucking relax. And then like, sure enough, that night I got really, really sick, and I was like, oh man, I don't know what's going on. It's still food poisoning. 5 days later, I'm like screaming in bed. I can't move. I'm dehydrated. So all of my muscles are atrophied. I'm laying in bed. I felt good for like 5 minutes, and I drove myself to Jack in the Box and ate a bunch of fucking Jack in the Box in the parking lot, threw it all up, went to a grocery store, bought a cake, a giant chocolate cake, and ate the whole fucking cake, threw it all up. And I was like, what is wrong with me? Right. So 5 days later, out of the blue, like my ex-wife calls. I hadn't talked to her in a while. She's like, yeah, dude, that's not food poisoning. You know, you gotta call the hospital. And I was like, fine, fuck it. Cause you know, we're dudes, and dudes don't ask for help. Like, I'll be lost for like 5 hours driving around in circles. And I'm never going to ask anyone for directions, cause I'm just not that dude. And so I called the hospital, and they're like, yeah, bro, that's not food poisoning. They're like, we'll call you an ambulance right now. And I was like, nah, fuck that. I'll drive over. I'll drive. And they're like, you are not going to drive. Like, whatever's wrong with you is serious. And I was like, well, I'm not going to call your ambulance, because it's going to be a $10,000 bill or some shit. You know, you're going to stick me with something crazy, and I don't want that. So
totally.
The lady's like, you know what? Just call a cab. And I was like, all right, I'll call a cab. And so I call the cab, and he rolls up to the house, and I crawled from like my driveway into the cab, and I was like, hospital. And I just passed out. And that was all I had left in me. And I wake up to the dude screaming, like, which hospital? Where are we going? I need you awake right now. Da, 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 da. He's like, I need you to stay with me. Blah, blah, blah. Right. So that whole first scene in Cyrus Perkins is identical to the situation that I was
wow.
in.
I can just imagine being him.
Being oh, like, it was insane.
What?
So
this dude just yells hospital and passes out in my backseat. Like,
so check this out. This is the craziest thing. So I had had heart surgery like 2 years before, and I was on blood thinners. So I was like, really, like, they couldn't operate on me. Turns out it was my gallbladder, and it was distended. It was like the valve itself had closed, so it was just filling with bile. And I was like probably half a day away from my gallbladder rupturing and the bile just hitting my bloodstream and me dying. So I get, so they couldn't operate on me. San Diego Comic-Con was the week after, and the doctors were like, don't drink, stop fucking smoking, you don't get on a plane, don't go to San Diego. And one of my graphic novels was coming out, and it was debuting in San Diego. And I was like, well, I'm fucking going to San Diego. So I go, and because I can't operate, they drilled a hole into my stomach and put a catheter bag there, and it was strapped to my leg, and it was just emptying bile into this bag at San Diego Comic-Con. And every once in a while I would lapse and pass out at the table. So I'm sitting there sweating, signing comic books, and Jamal Igel sitting next to me, and I'd be like, Jamal, just passed out. And he'd be like waking me up, and I'd be like, no, I'm fine. And so then, and that was the first San Diego Comic-Con where I took a break, where I was like, no, guys, I got to go to the hotel and sleep. So I get back, and they're going to operate after the blood thinner is out of my system, right? So I go back to the hospital, and I relapse. Like the tube gets clogged. So I pass out for real again. I'm going to die. And I have a friend drive me over. It's casual. We know what's going on this time. And I was like, fuck it. I'm going to call a cab to get home because my friend couldn't pick me up. Same cab driver picks me up, drives me home. And I get to thank him for saving my life. So,
this dude's like, what a fucking badass comic writer.
No, this is like, it's like 3 weeks later.
For his craft.
Well, I totally would. But you know, the funny thing is like 3 weeks later, the guy pulls up and it's the same taxi driver. And he looks at me and he's like, have you been here the whole time? And I was like, no. This is just a relapse, bro. I had not been in the hospital for 3 weeks. But but being in the hospital gave me the inspiration for this. I was like, people have to have died in the back of taxi cabs. You know what I mean? And like, why wouldn't that be a rolling haunted house? If someone dies horrifically in the back of a cab and the ghost gets trapped in there, wouldn't that make a good idea? And then I was like, what if it's a murder mystery? What if it's a little kid? So I was... The taxi driver, Anna drew the taxi driver to look a lot like me, but really I'm the little kid in the back of the cab. So I kind of got to write both roles and play both roles. And that's why it's one of my favorites, because I turned fucking lemons into lemonade, man. That shit was rough. It was a real bad time. Did.
Man, yeah. Anybody listening to this, like, man, when you wake up with a headache and call into work, like, I'm going to feel like shit forever now, because I'm going to think of you like at a Comic-Con fucking half dying, passing out, signing autographs. Someone be like, oh, I couldn't get up and go to the office today.
Well, you know what's crazy is that's why I don't draw anymore, Brock, because I didn't want to be one of those artists at the table that's not looking someone in the eye and talking to someone. So at conventions, I stand the entire time. I shake hands and I wear eye to eye contact. I'm not one of those dudes that wants to just be like, hey, I'm drawing, you know?
Like, eventually,
now y'all know Dwanch is a bad motherfucker.
Yeah. Trying.
I to write it as a story. I knew that something's gonna happen because I had texted him and then he didn't text back. And then when he did text back, he was like, I'm in the hospital. And I was like, what? And he pretty much conveyed the entire story that he just said via text. Like calling. I was like, stop texting me. It's too crazy. What is this, true? What's going on? It was like, he was like getting it out. Like, and then my gallbladder, and then I was in the cab and I almost died. That's pretty crazy, right? Cause like taxi cabs are probably haunted, right? Jesus Christ. I was like, that's
a gold mine right there.
I mean, I used to watch Taxi Cab Confessions on HBO and I thought I saw some wild shit, but no one ever died. I mean, that was more kinky, I guess, but like, weird shit happens in taxi cabs, apparently.
Evidently being a taxi driver is like the most, it's not the most dangerous, but it has the highest homicide rates of any job. Oh, more wow. Taxi drivers get killed than per capita than any other worker.
Or, oh, that's
like way higher than police.
That's wow. We could reverse engineer the story and tell it from a dead cabbie's point of view now. That's part two.
Yeah. it's like the new cab driver and the guy who used to have the cab.
Right. Oh, that would be like the worst story. Like, imagine you're already like, oh, I got to deal with all these shitheads in my cab, and now I got to deal with the shithead that was here before me. Ugh, the worst.
He's just like a total douche. Right?
And it's terrible too. Like, you're like, oh shit, like I finally got my job at the DMV and I'm haunted by the person who worked here before. It's like the worst. You're like,
oh, that's too funny.
Yeah. So I didn't get a chance to read that one yet, but I really enjoyed the Prom of the Dead Spores.
Yeah. Thanks.
Yeah. Yeah, that was kick-ass.
Yeah, I like
high-energy, crazy concept.
Yeah, I like teenage dramas. Like, I'm, like, unapologetically a 90210 dude. Like, I will watch all of that shit any time of the day. Like, the OC, I watch it once a year just to fucking get my...
It's so good. I hate how good the OC is.
It's so good. Man. It's so good. It's, like, one of the best shows. So, like, yeah. So, I wanted to do something like that, but with, like, a horror twist. And what I really wanted to do with that series is kind of subvert expectations. Like... the characters that you think you're going to be following around, you're not. The zombies that you think are zombies are not. Like, everything is going to change over the course of this thing. And it keeps me on my toes. Like, I have to up my game because I don't want to get in a rut where I feel like you let the genre take over and then you lean into the genre too much. Like, I need good characters and I need to care about them when they die. Right. Like, that's the, that's part of the problem with horror is like, if I don't care about the characters, then who gives a shit? You know, I like gore, like Brockton loves gore, but, yeah, I mean, for me, it's the horror is, it comes from the characters themselves. Like how, like when you go with the depth of humanity, you know,
in like 83 pages, I think it was, there was at least like 4 or 5 times somebody either died or didn't die that I did not expect.
Right.
And in such a short time, I didn't think that the deaths would be like as impactful. I'm like, man, I really like that guy. Or why did he have to get eaten? Or like, oh, sick. He didn't get eaten. Like, you know.
You know what's crazy about that too is like that original Kickstarter for Prom of the Dead, I had opened it up for guest spots. Like, we'll draw you in the comic book, right? One of my friends, a coworker, plopped in the money and I started writing her into the book and she was going to die, like in this, you know, but I started really, really liking the way I was writing her. So Loris winds up carrying over into the second volume, even though she was like, she paid to be a cameo. She's like a main character now. So I opened it up again on The Broken Circle and almost immediately 2 people jumped in. So now I'm like, man, am I going to fall in love with these characters when I write them? Because, you know, like, a lot of times your characters will tell you what the story is. Like, Jenny told us what the story was, really. I mean, yeah, we came up with the high concept, but when it was boiled down to, it's, you know, the super famous daughter of a superhero and her socialite friend. We're like, dude, it's all going to be told from their point of view and it's going to be awesome. And, you know, a lot of times when Brockton and I are bouncing back and forth with that stuff, like you said, they're us a lot of the time. I don't know which one of us is Dana and which one of us is Jenny most of the time. I think that on any given day, I could be the Jenny. You hold your liquor a lot better than I do.
That is sometimes true. I mean, it's like I said, I think it's like a 50-50 thing. You remember like New York, that was bad for me. I didn't hold my liquor very well there.
Oh, I think I did. Okay, yeah, you're right. Maybe it is like
I was the Jenny, you were the Dana. And then there's been San Diego's where, you know, and there's been Puerto Rico's where we, you know, Jenny, we go back and forth. That's what's so fun writing them is that like, you get to play those two roles and be like, yeah, I've been there in both situations. Like, it's very easy to write that dialogue because I have both said it and received it. You know?
Right.
So.
Right. And you know what? I would say this, Robert Venditti is our Dana. That's probably more the case.
Rudina is Robert Venditti. Yeah. The one that will never, he is the, like, if we're, when we hang with Rob, he takes care of us. He's the, you know, he's the
voice of reason.
What a wonderful transition, because I've been very, very excited to ask Brockton, your videos that you're doing for Bad Idea are fucking dope, for one. Oh. Like, they're just like, it's funny, the whole premise, I'm all in. Like, I pre-ordered everything I could and I'm getting everything. I'm really excited. You know, the one that Robert's writing, that one is awesome. I'm really excited for the whale one. I forgot these titles. I'm a shitty podcast host. Sorry.
Yes. Tankers is Rob's book. And yeah, it's great. They got ENIACs coming out this month.
This week, Wednesday, right?
For a long time too. And so it was like, when this whole, especially when the whole like pandemic thing kind of started, it was like, well, what can we do to keep people, like, you know, engaged and having a good time? And he was like, man, you shoot and chop video, right? And I was like, yeah. And he was like, well, why don't we do some stuff like that? So that kind of whole thing opened up. Josh Johns, who is their marketing director over there, he's the guy who's like green lighting all this stuff and coming up with stuff. And I say, can we go drive tanks and shoot machine guns? And he's like, yeah, all right, I'll, you know, tell me how it's going to happen. So it's been real great. That's been super fun. Those guys are great. I'm super excited for the comic books that are coming out from them. And I will just say, we have more video stuff that's coming out that's going to blow people's minds, because we were like, well, now what do we do to one up the tankers? You know, like, what do we do? We got some stuff. So it's going to be fun.
Yeah. I'm really, really pumped. The comics. Yeah. Like you said, they look great. You guys have just fucking rock stars, like, coming out swinging on these Bad Idea comics. Yeah. I also am just such a fan of, like, the fuck you to speculators. Cause, like, I fucking hate speculators. Like, it's so aggravating. I remember the Behemoth put out the Girl Walks Home Alone at Night comic, and I had to pay like $20 for the first one because I slept on it. And I just, like, shit like that aggravates me, man. Like, I try and stay pretty involved and focused and know what's coming out. And, man, sometimes you forget. Like, there's just so much more indie comics now.
Yeah. You can't catch everything. And that's one of the things – that was kind of one of their mission statements going in, is that they wanted – everybody to be able to affordably have a copy of their book. They're like, how do we make that happen? And I mean, that I didn't have anything to do with that stuff. They were just like, this is how we're going to make sure that if you want this first issue, you are going to have an opportunity to get it without losing your home for it. You know? So it was like, it's cool. They're great about it. They're very, I mean, it's a real punk rock aesthetic. You know, there's like, I mean, we literally came to them and said, we want to go to this place where you can rent tanks, and we're going to rent a tank, and Rob's going to drive it. And then we're going to, you know, they, and then when the machine gun, they were like, you can shoot a 60 caliber machine gun. And I was like, well, if I buy a bunch of inflatable dinosaurs, will you let me shoot them? And those guys were like, hell yeah, just shoot the dinosaurs or whatever. So it's been real cool. Like, it's wild being able to pitch that kind of stuff and have them come back and say, like, yeah, when are you leaving to go do it? Like, oh, all right. Great, yes. They're like, absolutely. Yeah, and we had worked together a bunch of stuff to begin with when they were doing the button stuff with that. And so it was like I'd already edited and chopped a bunch of things for them where I think they felt comfortable with it, where they were like, you know, we know we're not just, you're not just doing some crazy shit. You're going to produce something that's going to look good. And so it was, yeah, super a lot of fun. And circling back to Broken Circle, you see what I did? The Kickstarter is still going on right now, right?
Oh yeah. There's like, I think probably when this post, it'll be like 3 or 4 days left. I'm sure we're going to hit it. I really do hope though, that we get to 12, because 12,000 unlocks a whole nother trade paperback for free for everybody. And that's that Mind Palace web comic that I did.
I want that bad.
It's that series has been a lot of fun. We just wrapped it up. We did that shit for 3 years, and it's basically it all takes place in Brian Fuller's mind, the creator of Hannibal. Like, the thing about Brian is all of his shows get canceled after 2 or 3 seasons, and it's not because they're not great. It's just because they're ahead of their time, and people don't see it until later, right?
Yeah.
And the idea is all of those characters still exist in his mind, and he still has stories to tell, but because he can't tell them and he doesn't have that expression, that creative freedom, all of those ideas are rotting in his brain and driving him crazy. So I get to take all of those characters and drive Brian crazy. And the coolest thing though is Brian started reading it, and we've gone back and forth and talked about characterizations and what he's doing and what he likes, what he doesn't like about what I'm doing. So it's kind of fun. And you know, the whole Fannibal community is insane. Like, they're all like deep, deep, deep into Hannibal. I don't know how they feel about this Clarice show. I don't know if anyone's seen it. Have you seen it, Brockton?
I have not seen it yet.
I haven't watched it yet either.
I don't want to watch it. Yeah. I don't know if I want to watch it, because Hannibal's such a strong storyline for me. I don't know if it's going to be a watered down version of that or if it's going to be good. But yeah, I haven't heard anything, and that's always a bad sign in COVID.
It's like a 6.4 on IMDb and a 32 on Rotten Tomatoes. So
32. That's no good.
32%. Yeah. So it's probably hot trash.
Yeah. It's either that, or there's that like weird militant group of dudes that like hate when women are like the main stars, you know, like remember when like Captain Marvel got, like,
yeah, I was about to say Captain Marvel,
whatever. Right. Yeah. People are crazy. Or
when everyone was pissed that Mandalorians had like tit armor.
Right.
They're, oh like, my God.
Still, like, what else are they supposed to do? Like,
I still can't believe that.
That's so funny. Yeah.
It's a weird time to be a nerd. Like, there's so much wonderful shit out there, but there's so much like just nasty toxicity, and like people get so amped up. And like, I still am shocked when like I can you know, tweet out a review, you know, my stupid little one tweet reviews I like to do. And when a pro or an artist or a writer like talks to me and they're like, oh, thank you, like that's cool. And like, I'm like, man, if I like had to like hear the shit that you guys hear on a daily basis, like I wouldn't reply to, I wouldn't even be online. I got how to hide in a fucking cabin in the woods and just write stories.
Well, you know,
Dave is a workhorse and he gets on there and does it, but I have a difficult time with social media. I definitely do. Or I'm like, I just can't, I don't want to.
Yeah. You know, that's the thing though, too, is I like a good review just as much as a bad review these days. Like if I drove you to any kind of emotion, whether that be happiness, anger, sadness, whatever it is, I drove you to do something. And then, you know, I almost forced your hand. Like you were so fucking angry with my stories that you had to write about it. Like, I love that. Like the back of the Double Jumpers trade, it has like a real shitty review on it. And I love that. I love putting the worst review for any of my books on the back cover. I just think it's the fucking funniest thing ever.
Well, they have to be invested for you to invoke that much anger in them.
Yeah. Like, yeah.
You don't just get pissed because it's a shitty book is shitty.
Yeah. I like it when you can, like, I like a good, not bad review, but like a review where they didn't like it, but they talk about stuff and you think to yourself as a writer or an artist, you say, oh damn, they're right. That isn't great. Like that part that they didn't like, I could do better than that. Like I love the constructive criticism stuff. The only time that I don't like stuff is when it's like, they're not even calling the characters by the right names. They're like, I don't like Mr. Sparkles. And I'm like, that's not even his fucking name. And I'm like, okay, I'm not going to get involved in this. I'm not going to like let this like, you know, so it's that kind of thing. But I do like a review where they talk about the things that, you know, might have been a problem for them, because a lot of times, especially if it's like something that they really are like, I liked all this stuff, but this, and I'm like, oh shit, I can see that. Yeah. I think that makes you a better artist.
Yeah. For sure.
I was just thinking for random side thought. I was just thinking like if we brought you on and started the show, we're like, so we brought you on today to talk about how much we did not like your books.
Oh, that would be fucking awesome. That would be, oh my God, we just totally got catfished.
There's everything wrong with Brahma the Dead.
I would have the best time. I would finish like a half a bottle of liquor. Like, that's my last podcast. I'm done.
Yeah. That's the thing. It's dry March right now. It's day one. And literally this is the longest I've gone without a drink is day one. And because COVID, man, like, usually when I'm on podcasts, and I'm really glad I'm not today, because like, you know, Brockton and I, you know, we've quietly been in the industry for a long ass time and we've seen some shit. We've seen some shit go down and we know some bad people. And like when I drink, I start talking shit. So I'm really glad that it's dry March. Because you guys are making it way too comfortable. You guys, it's like you guys are rubbing my feet right now. Like I'm relaxed. This is good stuff.
I mean, we do set out to hopefully get guests back on the show and book other people. Like the way we do our show, like we set up seasons and we do like a artist focus, like either an artist or a writer. And then we do like a publisher focus. Like we're moving on to Spurrier and we're doing Fantagraphics the next. Yeah.
Yeah, that book,
man, I was not, when I flipped through that book, I was like, I'm just not used to full blown penetration in comic books. I'm just not used to
that. Well, you know what? Here's the thing. I'm saving it until, when are we recording this? We should probably let people know that I think Brockton is going to be on with me, but we're going to do Terror Assaulter, that Fantagraphics book by Benjamin Mara. And we're going to be back on the show. I think it's in April or May?
Yeah, hold on. I can tell you.
I don't know how I missed that on the schedule, but that's exciting. I was just going to say you guys should come on and talk.
No, for some reason, people keep wanting to come back on. It's just, we are going to record. Well, it'll be posted the 21st. We'll have it
okay.
21st with you guys. Hopefully both of you talking about Terror Assaulter.
Yeah, I picked the one book on that list that I thought Brockton would want to read because it's just fucking gonzo. Like, I just saw it and was like, yep, that's the one.
You know, Dark Horse posted an ad for Jenny, and they quoted someone, but I don't know if they like forgot to mention what website said it or something, but they someone called it like pure gonzo story, like pure gonzo comic storytelling.
Oh, and I love it.
And I was like, oh shit. Like, anytime I hear gonzo, I just, you know, got the gods rest his soul. Hunter S. Thompson is a very special person to me.
Hunter!
I just reread Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas for the first time in forever recently.
Nice.
They had like a power outage here, and that book kicks ass. Yeah. And all his books. But yeah, so Terror Assaulter is April 18th.
Yeah, record the 18th, post on the 21st. Yeah, I recorded when I was in my senior year of high school. I was a private school kid, and I wrote a paper about the death of the American dream and about Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas. And I remember my English teacher was like, I didn't okay you to like talk about this book. And I was like, well, here's 15 pages and I wrote it and I don't care.
So that's the thing like about Jenny too, is I like to think that Brockton is my Hunter S. Thompson. You're my gonzo guy, but like, you're also the most thoughtful collaborator. Like, building worlds with you is like, just we blow each other's minds all the time, and then we've got to like focus it back in. And then when Brockton comes back around, like, honestly, you got a gentle touch over there, baby. That's what I'm saying. Like, you're so good.
Well, you said it too. It's like, even when we were talking about, when we were talking to Dark Horse about the book, it was like, you have to be like, you have to trust the other person, the other writer, like the way we did it. Because it wasn't like one of us wrote the entire issue and then we, you know, we came with the plot together and then one person wrote the issue and then somebody went back. We literally wrote 5 scripted pages at a time. And after I sent the first 5 pages, you were like, well, here's 5 more. And I was like, I didn't mean to set the precedent that we had to do 5 pages per time, but that's what we did until the book was done. And that's why, it was so fun. And it was also so much like, yeah, you have to trust the other person because they are writing the actual next 5 pages. And then you guys are going to get together and like massage it and make it all work and move stuff around and switch stuff. But initially, like, it was such a, I haven't done that before. I normally, when you co-write, you know, one of you takes an issue, one of you takes an issue, you follow the outline, then you go back and work on it. But we did it in a very strange way where there was a Google Doc, this living document that you'd go look at, you know, 5 hours later, and there'd be 5 pages there. Like, oh shit. Okay. All right. It's my turn. Yeah.
Yeah. So yeah. And like, you know, I was just talking to Bob and Kevin, the Metal Shark Bro guys, and they write the same exact way, Brock. I thought we were special, but I think that I got to take the wind out of our own sails. Or maybe it's just the 4 of us that work like that. I don't know. But like, I'm working on another book that I'm co-writing. I'm going to share you with an image with you guys in a second. But like, we plotted the whole thing out, but because I was more the seasoned comic book writer, I wrote the whole thing, right? And then Jessica Balboni, the co-writer, came in over the top and edited the shit out of me, and then also added lines here and there and took lines out, and, you know, really became like a very active editor on the book, even though we came up with the story together. And I imagine that's probably how most comics go. But yeah, it's a book called Banshees, and we don't have a home for it yet, but I'm sharing this with you guys just so I could fucking blow your minds about.
I've got the Banshees. I love me some Banshees.
Yeah. It's another great one. That's going to come out probably next year. We don't know exactly where yet, but we're hoping, you know, Image or Dark Horse or somewhere.
I very much like this art.
Yeah. Yeah. It's amazing. It's amazing. So yeah. I don't know, man. I mean, like, comics are great because you can do like big budget movies with 4 people working on it. That's pretty awesome, you know, and not to say that every comic needs to be a movie, but you have an unlimited budget to create whatever the hell you want to create. And I think that's why Jenny works so well in comic form the way it does, is because we just said, just throw all those ideas up against the wall and see what sticks, and then move things around and make it work, you know? Yeah.
Definitely. I still can't believe Nemo. Like, I just, I love Nemo. So, and I love how it makes like the Grogu noises, you know, like, it's like,
we were trying to figure out how I was going to talk. And then we were both like in our heads, the way we had been doing it. We were like, it's just like, you know, like, goo. And then she knows what it is. And we don't get to hear that. It's a Chewbacca situation. You know, where you're like, I don't know what he's saying, but Han.
Yeah, totally. That's good stuff.
The first thing that popped into my head when I saw Nemo was like Nemo in Dreamland, I think.
Yeah.
And then I was like, oh wait, it's a fish. And there's also the Fish Nemo movie, even though I'm sure it's its own separate thing. As I was like, that's kind of funny that it's a fish named Nemo.
Yeah.
That's the thing, is Nemo was the first name, and Dave came up with that. He was like, because it was originally going to be a big, crazy looking gun. And then it was like, what if it's like a kaiju piece, like thing of a kaiju, and like, you know, that's what it's been engineered for. And Dave was like, what if it looks like a fish and it's called Nemo? And I was like, oh shit. Then that ended up in the book. Like, there's no change to that. That is exactly how it was presented originally. And then that's what got up. Yeah, it's just like, oh yeah, yeah. Oh no. That's the second issue, isn't it?
Oh yeah, I'm not showing them any spoilers. I'm just showing them some of the art of the ASP, the Action Science Police base. It's just fucking nuts.
That color palette is sick.
Yeah, going through the Action Science thing. This is where she first gets to meet Neo. Ooh, it's good.
Oh. Yeah.
It's so good. Yeah, yeah, yeah. So we're going to go into the past in the second issue. We're going to go into the future. We're going to do a bunch of shit. It's just insane. I can't wait for people to read it. I reread it again last week just because I needed to, like, bone up on where we're at in the story right now. I wanted to make sure everything was consistent. And I started reading. I'm like, man, this is, you know, like, there's something really gratifying when you read a book that you wrote or you co-wrote and you're like, who fucking wrote this? Good shit, you know? And, like, that's how we feel about this book, man. It's great. Like, I think the only other books that I've...
Oh, I was saying, it kind of feels like there's like this big tangled ball of yarn you threw down and just start pulling strings out.
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, like, you're like, here's this super badass but like convoluted starting point. And then you just start like pulling out all these different plot lines in the past and in the future and the present. And
yeah, when Brockton wrote that timeline, I think it almost killed him. Like, you were like, oh my God, it's just so much. There's so much that we have, you know, it's crazy.
That was the problem. That was a big problem.
Like, still probably better than the Zelda timeline.
Yeah. I don't understand the Zelda. You know, the other thing about video games, Nintendo video games in particular is, man, I don't want to read my video games. I like good, well-done cut cinematics. You know what I mean? So, like, yeah, Nintendo has always been, I've always been a Nintendo apologist. Like, I love Nintendo, but I also fucking hate Nintendo. And I started writing for video games. Like, I wrote a Nintendo game a couple years ago, and I'm working on something for PlayStation right now. I can't talk about it, but I was always a Nintendo apologist. I have every Nintendo like behind me. The good thing about working for PlayStation is I had to buy one to research stuff, right? Now I'm just playing video games. And I'm like, wow, I've been missing this my entire life. So everything is new to me, which is great.
Yeah, I go in and out of gaming. I'm on like my not into it phase right now, which is funny because when the PS5 came out, I was like really pissy I couldn't get one. And then I was like, I haven't even played a video game in a month, but I'm like refreshing like websites, like, is it available?
I want to just have it. I just want to look at
it. I just want it. I just need it. I just let me spend a bunch of fucking money I shouldn't spend. That's why I love comic books. Like, I just, oh man, I get so many books. Especially now because of the pod, people reaching out and like learning more about indie stuff. And man, my mail is like a couple times a week, it's like fucking Christmas. I know my mailman hates me. He hates the shit out of me.
It's like, bro, you're causing deforestation.
Like, I get like cases of omnibuses shipped from eBay.
Yeah, I have a problem with eBay. I have a real big, I'm bored at home and drinking my third bottle of wine. And like, I'll go on eBay and just be like, oh, I really want the first appearance of Kang. Or you know what? I love the Enchantress. I got two fucking copies of the first appearance of the Enchantress just show up on my doorstep. And I was all, who bought those? When did I buy those? I was drunk as shit when I bought both of those on the same night. What was I doing? Like, I literally was in a like infinite loop of buying old comics a couple weeks ago. It was so bad. Oh man.
So what did you do for Nintendo?
Oh, there was a game called New Super Lucky's Tale. And it's like a Nintendo, it's almost like a Mario game. It's an old school classic platformer, a lot like Super Mario World. And it's got this little little fox that you follow around. It's pretty cool. It's not a very long game, I'll say that. It's like 7 big levels and then a bunch of mini games that you can play. But I got to write 3 out of the 7 levels. And by that, not coding anything. Oh, cool. I just got to write the story. So so Lucky goes to a wrestling world, and I got to write like all of my favorite little bits of like, you know, WWE stuff in there, and that was a lot of fun. But yeah.
Speaking of that kind of reminds me of Infinite 7.
Yeah.
You have so much like just an amalgamation of pop culture. Like I was just like. That blew my mind. The scene, it's in the third issue, the end of the third issue or the end of the fourth issue, when you get you go to the hideout and there's the stuffed xenomorph and there's the T-21 the robot and then there was the Michael Myers mask, the Jason mask, like all these just like all this fun stuff, and then some of your characters are kind of like. Archetypal too. Yeah. I thought that was so fucking smart, dude. Like I loved that. So like I had of all the stuff that I've read that you sent me, I really like Spores and I love man Cyrus. I just really connected Cyrus Perkins, man. Like that was so strong. And but yeah, okay. Infinite 7 was real fucking dope.
Yes. Hey guys, I'm so sorry. My daughter is FaceTiming me, and she's at school, so I never get to talk to her. But thank you guys so much for on, and I can't wait to come back and talk to you guys later.
No, yeah, thank you, Brockton. We appreciate it, man.
Thanks, Tommy, guys.
Tommy, I said, what's up?
Yeah, it was awesome meeting you.
You too.
Yeah, so Infinite 7 was something that so the rumor that was going around when James Bond came back was all of the James Bonds. Exist in a timeline. So James Bond is the code name, not 007. So every time they replace 007, they just get a new James Bond, right? And I took that and I was like, well, what if every action movie was connected? What if every one of those characters and archetypes that we loved growing up worked for a secret agency and there were only 7 agents? So the idea was if, you know, a Bruce Lee dies, he'll get replaced by Jackie Chan. As that the Kung Fu master. And so like I was able to tell a long story with characters that you already knew, but then tweak it so that it was a new experience. And then my nod to 007, I'm a huge Sean Connery James Bond fan. And so my idea was Agent 7 was the last agent to get signed on. It was the Infinite 6. Then they added the 7th agent, and then Sean Connery never went away. So you've got this crotchety old James Bond character that's more dangerous than anyone else on the planet, and everyone's afraid of him because he'll just cut your nuts off in the middle of the night, right? That's his deal. And you know, unfortunately, like I think I was at that point, I may have been with the wrong company, you know, not to talk ill of the company I worked for and started, but I think at that point, there were a handful of books that were doing really, really well there. And then they were focusing on those books and not really focusing on the rest of the library. So I was able to tell 8. I actually have 4 more, and I'm most likely not going to be able to do it because I left that series on a huge cliffhanger and I would love to go back to it. I just don't think it's in the cards.
Yeah, you mentioned that on Twitter when we were chatting the other day that Cyrus Perkins, you said you had 2 more stories planned for him.
Yeah.
And it probably wouldn't happen. And I was like, no. Like it made me so sad because the whole deal when I started reading that, because I went into every single one of these blind. You sent them to me, I started reading them. You know, I like doing that sometimes, just like getting into something, seeing where it goes. And so pull up any reviews or you know, synopsises or anything. And when I'm reading Perkins, and the whole time I'm like, because you know, before we actually work on Mikey's death, there's the hotel incident with the couple or the once couple, and I was like, man, like I'm fucking here for this. Like they're gonna be like, it's like a buddy cop ghost haunted taxi cab. Like I've never read anything like this. And then you know, I could have been on that for 12, 13 issues, man. If they like had like a new case for every arc, you know, I was like, man. And then like 4 issues, I was just like, oh, I want more. And But yeah, that was but still, I mean, sometimes I'll take what I can get, and four great issues is better than nothing at all, you know?
You know, that's the thing, is like Infinite Seven and Cyrus Perkins, I had more in me, and I, again, turning lemons into lemonade, it was like, I'm never going to be able to do these stories the way I want to do them. So I'm not going to do them. It's fine. They're going to just sit in my fucking brain and eat away at my head. Oh, wait a second. I know a guy in Hollywood that this has happened to, Brian Fuller. So literally that Mind Palace was born out of my desire to tell more stories with the characters that I love. And that's why, you know, I mean, honestly, if my rights weren't tied up at that company, I would do more. I would just kickstart it and do it. And that's kind of why I'm doing the Broken Circle and the Spores trilogy on Kickstarters, because I wanted complete control over it. I didn't want anyone telling me I couldn't do it.
Yeah, freedom.
Yeah. And that's what's great about Kickstarter.
That's what it's
right?
about, man.
Yeah.
How does that work with Behemoth?
I know those guys really, really well. Okay. By the way, you mentioned them earlier, and I was like, yeah, if you ever want them on your podcast, let me know. They're great guys. I've known them for a long time. They've wanted to work with me on a bunch of stuff, and we've gone back and forth about projects. You know, they do a lot of licensed properties, and they're like, Dave, do you want to do this? Dave, do you want to do that? And sometimes it's like, you know, no, I mean, I do or I don't. Like, there was one that I wrote a treatment for them, and I was like, man, I hope this gets made. And it just, the rights kind of fell apart on it. But we've always had that connection. And so our deal is just different than most people's, you know, like most people's, they have the traditional publisher, you know, paying all expenses. Our deal is more like a distribution deal. Like they distribute the book for me, but I cover all of it. And that's why the Kickstarters are what they are. And that's why my contract's different than everyone else's. And, you know, it's a whole weird professional gray area, right? It's like, but you know, that's a thing that like,
well, it's cool. It works out like that.
Yeah. I mean, but you know, you have to ask, right? Like when people give you contracts, you're either comfortable with it or you're not. And I've signed some bad contracts. I've signed contracts that aren't allowing me to do what I want to do. Like I would love to do more Cyrus. I would love to do more Infinite Seven. I got to tell the last part of Double Jumpers, which was great. There's a second volume of that, which is like, you know, thank them for allowing me to do it, because, you know, like comics are tough, you know, making money at comics is tough. Being a publisher is tough, and I get it. But the fact that I won't be able to touch those properties ever again is a bit of a bummer. And so when it came to Spores, Prom of the Dead, Broken Circle, I just wanted to be free and clear of any obligation to anyone else. And that's where we're at today, right? And Dark Horse, by the way, fantastic. They are a great company to work with and work for, and no complaints at all. Like everyone there is enthusiastic about comic books, and they believe in you and your property, and they kind of leave you alone. And then, you know, but they come with great notes. So you know, it's the best of both worlds, really.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
They so should kiss your ass, man. They got, I want like action figures. I want sexy hardcovers. I want, dude.
Oh man. I
want to go. I'm all in for Jenny, man. Like I'll buy a statue. Like
I was thinking about how Jenny Zero is kind of like a little bit in the future. So it almost kind of makes sense. It reminded me, reading Jenny Zero, I almost saw like Gen Z. I'm like, is this about the Gen Zers or fighting aliens, man?
That's by the way, that's a great idea. You should trademark that shit, because that's great. Let's just work on that, guys. Yeah. Do it. It's so good. It's awesome. Yeah.
So I don't know, I just had to throw that out there.
No, I didn't even put that together. They had the Gen Z. That's solid.
Well, you know, it's so funny. Like we went back and forth about after, you know, because you live with the title for so long, and like, honestly, the first thing I do when I create something is I name it, because if you name it, you give it its power and you give it its structure. So like for me, a story isn't even a story until I name it. And we came up with Party Monster that first night. We're like, she's a party monster. She's a club girl that becomes a monster. And we're like, that's it. We got it, right? And then when we started pitching it, there were actually a lot of companies that wanted that book. And then surprisingly, a couple that were like, no. And we were like, okay, cool. And then a few of them were like, keep the name Party Monster. It's great. And then when we got at Dark Horse, they were like, could you change the name? And we were like, wow, what is the name of this book? What are we going to call this book? You know, it's like monstrous or whatever, you know what I mean? But it all didn't ring true. And then we were like, Jenny Zero, it just sounds so fucking punk rock. It sounds so much like the book that we wanted to make, right? It didn't need to be called Party Monster. You know, we just named it after her and it was perfect. So yeah, I can't wait for you guys to read the rest of it. It actually just gets better and better.
Jenny Zero is the party monster, so.
Yeah, hopefully they'll let us call Volume 1 Party Monster. Like, that'll be, like, the subtitle of it when we get there.
That's one of the bummers about, like, so, like, I felt insanely cool that you guys sent us this, like, super early release, and it's got, you know, like, the watermark on it, and I'm like, oh, shit, I'm like an insider, like, oh, I'm fucking in the scene. And, but then, like, I read it, and it's fucking dope, and then I'm like, well, shit, it doesn't even come out till April. And that means number 2 doesn't even come out till May. Like, damn it. Like, I got to wait.
Yeah, I know.
I'll have to do a follow-up when more come out.
Yeah. You guys can have me on whenever, man. I love talking shit. And, you know, it's always fun to talk to people that love comic books. And that, you know, I mean, it's like, honestly, the only thing that connected me to my dad was comic books. Like he had a passion for it. I had a passion for it. He also, like, you know, traveled a lot, was never around. So when he did come home, he brought a stack of comics and we just sit around reading comics. So
that's cool.
It's been in my blood for like ever. I worked in a comic shop forever. I think I've pretty much hit every aspect of the industry at this point, publishing, writer, artist, letter, all of it. So yeah, it's been a wild ride. Hopefully, you know, Jenny will beget more Jenny. But you know what I mean? And I also want to write Ninjax. So like, if I could get Brockton on a Ninjax book with me, I would be like,
oh shit.
And cause like, we're like, we want to tell Gonzo action stories and a British ninja. Come on. Of course we want to do a British ninja. And we're actually like, we know a bunch of people at Valiant too. So we're going to try and climb up that pole too.
The whole bad idea thing is the guy who used to run Valiant,
to,
right?
Dinesh.
And Matt Kent and a couple other people are kind of helping out.
Yeah. And Brockton knows Dinesh from back in the day. Like, Brockton was a convention organizer. We didn't get to talk about that. He was one of the guys behind the talent coordination for North Carolina Comic Con.
Oh, wow. So.
So, and that's a great show. If you guys ever make
that's
it out there,
way to get connected.
Yeah. If cons ever come back, I don't know if you saw, but, San Diego got postponed again until 2022. So bit of a bummer there. And, you know, hopefully we'll all be able to get together soon.
You know, what's funny is Texas is acting like they're going to have one in May though, but no talent's booking. Like no. Comic pros are like, yeah, I'll do that. They're like, no, like, I don't want to go into a crowd yet. Like, take a breather.
I say before, was like, music festivals have been announcing dates this fall, like a ton of them.
Yeah.
Like, who the fuck is going to go to a festival 2021, fall of 2021? I'm not.
Like, no. Yeah, I don't know.
I don't want to be anywhere near people until like 2022.
I mean, like, luckily I have a heart condition, so I might be able to get those vaccines early. But yeah, I mean, I'm not going in until that happens, you know? It's hard enough. Jumping on a plane these days, and I've done that a couple times, and it's eerie and creepy, and I don't like it, you know. But yeah, I mean, we accidentally threw a Super Bowl party this year. It was an accident. Like, we literally invited 2 people that invited 2 people, and then our neighbors came over, and that was 4 people. I'm like, there's like 10 people in here. We're definitely getting this shit, right? I mean, like, there's no knock on wood, so far so good. But yeah, it's just not the right time. It's not the right time to put your life at risk for comics like that. Like you said, life finds a way. You found a way to get your comic books without putting anyone in danger. I just hope that we don't have too many casualties on the retailer side of things, because, you know, yeah. I mean, it's like you said, it's like your bartender is your comic book slinger. The person that you see, you know, frequently once a week, and they mix a drink for you. They say, hey, what do you like? Okay, I got the thing that you're going to like. And then they pull that book out and share it with you. That experience is something that's very rare in entertainment and something that we shouldn't take for granted. And that's why I'm stoked that retailers know about our book. I'm stoked that, you know, they're ordering. I'm stoked that Dark Horse has made it returnable so that stores can take a gamble on us and not feel like they're going to get stuck with a bunch of books. And I don't think they're going to get stuck with a bunch of books. I think people are going to really like that book. So
no, I think it's going to do well, man. I really do. Like I said, I'm not like the fucking comic book whisperer master, but I've read a lot of number one issues, and yours was special. And I'm not saying that to like, I'm not trying to cup your junk, you know, like I appreciate you coming on the show, but like for real, like you guys have something really special and it's good and it's different. It's very different. And like we talked about earlier, man, it sucks that it got delayed, but you're dropping that comic at the right time. Like
yeah,
after Godzilla and Kong fight, you're going to have Jenny Zero hit the stands, man.
Well, you know what's crazy? I know the executive producer of Kong Godzilla, I've gone to Legendary and hung out with him there. And, you know, that one, I think, is going to be bigger and better than the others that have come before. And he and I have talked about that, my buddy John that works at Legendary. And, you know, they were a little gun shy because, you know, he's been interested in Jenny Zero too. And we were talking about it. I was like, look, I got this giant monster book for you. And he's like, you know, we're pivoting at Legendary. We're making smaller movies now because we don't really know where the market's going to go. And then Kong and Kongzilla is going to be a huge movie. And they're going to have to probably reevaluate it again and be like, all right, big movies are back. You know, it's interesting. I don't know how we're going to, how movie theaters are going to survive. I can't believe that we've gone this long.
Something kind of refreshing about movie theaters being closed is that there's not a new Marvel movie being shoved down your throat every 2 months.
Oh, see, that's the kind of shit that
controversial, but
give me more. I love it. I mean, like,
I'm kind of like, Marvel's great, but I'm just kind of sick of it taking over the whole movie industry. So it's been nice seeing like other movies have a chance to shine.
Sure.
For the first time in years.
I like Marvel movies and superhero movies in general more. I've always loved them. I usually go see them at midnight, you know, and pay $20. The theater I like is $20 and it's close and I pay that. But man, I like movies a lot more that I don't talk about them online. Cause man, you talk about MCU or you talk about like the new Justice League cut or you like people just get down your throat and it's always got to be like this Marvel DC dick measuring contest. And like, I don't want to talk to them about it anymore.
Really have any good movies besides a few Batmans. Like,
yeah, that's a tough one. I feel like there's a lot of good stuff in them, but like, it's like, the Star Wars prequels. You could probably cut all of those movies into one really good movie, but you watch them all on their own. And you're just kind of like, man, like, Birds of Prey is pretty great until the very end. Wonder Woman's pretty great until the very end. And then they all kind of pull this weird Iron Man thing where their final act is cheap. And you're like, guys, what? And then you look at Wonder Woman 1984 and oh man, like you knew that shit was going to make a trillion dollars if done right. And you know, COVID aside, it doesn't look like they put that much money into that movie.
No.
It just doesn't feel cohesive. It doesn't feel like anywhere near the quality of the first one. The actors are great. It's charming or whatever, but like, it's just not a good movie. And I'm thinking, you know, your risk reward on that, guys, you could have put in a lot of effort into that movie and made the best movie ever, but you didn't, you know? It's kind of crazy. I don't know. I don't know what DC's doing.
But then they give Snyder $75 million because a bunch of fans got mad and started like, so yeah, I love DC. Like I love them. I love both DC and Marvel. You know, I'm all about big two. I'm all about the new X-Men stuff.
That's so good.
I'll love Batman forever. You know, I haven't really got to get into it, but I've bought every issue of Future State. I have like this huge stack of Future State that I'm going to get to read one day. But, you know, and so like I have love for all publishers and indie and everything. And I don't hold biases because I think you're kind of hurting yourself because you're taking away good stories from your, like you're hurting yourself by saying like, I don't read Marvel or I don't read superhero stuff. Like, well, no, you're missing a lot. Like, you know,
just read what Marvel you want to read and don't read what Marvel you don't want to read. Yeah. Don't limit yourself.
It's hard with DC. Like DC just... there's so much weird stuff going on with DC right now anyway, just with the comics and the move to digital and the other weird layoffs.
Backtracking a minute to where we talked about the Star Wars prequels and cutting them up. So legend has it, rumor has it that
Topher Grace.
Well, everyone talks about cutting Jar Jar Binks out of the original trilogy, and it would be better. But evidently, somebody took the whole original trilogy and cut only the Jar Jar Binks scenes together.
And it's probably a better movie.
Coherent sense. It's like he's in all of the most important scenes, evidently. So like,
that's
it's
so funny.
An actual coherent movie. It's only Jar Jar.
And by the way, I may bash Wonder Woman 1984, but it's mainly because I had high hopes for it. And I'm a huge DC fan. Like Wally West was my Flash growing up because I grew up like post-crisis DC. And I'll say it, Wally West was a huge influence on what we did with Jenny Zero, because he was such a fuck up when he came out of crisis and he had to outrun Barry's legacy, which was like the hardest thing for that guy to do. And he was always bumbling around and always making a mess of things. His family life sucked. You know, he was just like petty and childish and not ready to be the Flash. And then when he becomes the Flash, you're like, yes, I've seen this arc and that's the hero I want. I want to know his flaws or her flaws, and I want to see them evolve over time, right? I think that's part of the problem with comics is it's really cyclical, and like something crazy could happen to Spider-Man, but you know that Doc Ock is not going to be Spider-Man forever, right? You just know that that's, you know, we're going to get back to Peter eventually, right? When that happens, it sort of cheapens your journey a little bit because, you know, Captain America died a couple times. You knew he was going to come back. So it's kind of like, well, what's the good in that?
That's the issue I have with the big heroes, definitely. And also, like, when they're just, like, too fucking powerful, like Superman, and you're like,
oh, I've got a fucking Black Label really Superman
vulnerability.
Book.
It's got to be better than the Black Label superhero or Superman book that we got.
Oh, man. I know people over there, too, and I've been like, hey, I've got a Flash story. And they're like, well, we're locked up for the next 5 years, but you can talk to someone maybe 5 years from now. And I was like, yeah, no, that's cool. Like, I can create my own characters. I can do my own thing. And, like, honestly, I got in the business loving Frank Miller and wanting to write Daredevil and just, but not even write Daredevil like for an extended period of time, just write Daredevil for 6 issues, do the story I want to tell and be done and walk away. Right now, I can't even fathom the idea of wanting to do that at this point. Like I'm not wired for it really. Now that said, if someone says, hey Dave, write a Daredevil story, of course I'd fucking do it. But you know, I'm not going out and actively pursuing that shit, you know. We got Jenny Zero, we got the Broken Circle, I've got that Banshees book and a couple of other top secret shit that like I really can't talk about yet. But yeah, I mean, it's
hell yeah,
it's fun. I mean, look, being 47 and getting into comics professionally, I say professionally, but I've been doing it for 10 years, and I finally feel like, hey, I'm doing something, you know. So it's never too late.
That's cool, man. I'm glad you feel like that, because you deserve it. Like for real, like reading your stuff, you're a really great writer. You're really funny, and you just really nail these story beats. Back to your Kickstarter. Like, I don't know how many times I can retweet the damn thing, and I made the little Bernie meme, and I was trying to be creative, and I'm pretty sure my followers are like, why does he just fucking keep retweeting the same shit? But I'm so excited for your Kickstarter and to talk about what you're doing now, listeners. If you back his Kickstarter, he's going to give you all his fucking books digitally. He's going to give you this digital suite of wonderful comics, and you should just get that. I think the tier I got both physical, the volume 1 and volume 2 physical, and it's like 30
bucks. Yeah,
30 bucks plus shipping. And then all the digital stuff you get. And I mean, yeah, I'm really hoping that the Hannibal tier unlocks too, because that'd be super great.
We're going to find out. In 4 days. And then your followers on Twitter are going to be like, wow, he's not talking about that fucking book anymore. God, thank God. Oh, trust me. Kickstarters are like the most stressful thing. So anyone that's listening and anyone that wants to go check out the Broken Circle Kickstarter, thank you just for even looking at it. It's literally like trying to watch water boil for 28 days. And I'm like, is the water going to fucking boil? Like, is this going to happen? And everyone's like, it's going to happen, Dave. Don't worry. You know, you come into once you hit the halfway point, a lot of people are like, you got it, because the last few days are intense, right? it doesn't mean I don't wake up with night fucking terrors every night going like, is it going to happen? You know, my wife's like, what, this again? It's crazy. But I will breathe easy in 4 days, and I'm pretty sure we're going to be okay.
Well, yeah, I know that the app itself, like it tells you like the last 48 hours, it like remind, like you can watch stuff on Kickstarter, and then the last 48 hours, it'll be like, hey, this is almost over. You should probably back it. So yeah, I'm hoping, if as good as volume one was, like the promise of volume two and three for Spores is like, for listeners, it's like zombies, but it's like alien zombie spore mushroom invasion. And like the big walking, like War of the Worlds organic, like.
Yeah. Yeah. The human spiders. They're yeah, man. Insane.
That like, oh, it's nuts.
We get sucked up in there.
Yeah. That's the thing. Yeah. The zombies actually, it's more like there's an alien life force that's terraforming Earth. It's gonna start recreating Earth in its own image so that they can live here. And so what you're getting is kind of stage one of that. So if you like alien invasions that are different, you'll probably like this. You know, we'll see.
And Ian's art is so fucking good.
Oh, yeah.
Spores in the air. It's like, it's almost relevant with our pandemic. I thought Corona was bad, but, you know, at least it's not alien spores that are going to turn you into a zombie.
Not yet. The year is young. It's 2021, but I mean, we're only a quarter of the way through. We could still get zombies in there somewhere, right? I mean, that might happen. Anyway, guys.
There was ever a time.
We know 2021 is 2020 round two. Yeah, I'm starving. We've been on for about 2 hours.
Yeah. You guys go grab some dinner. And dude, thank you so much for having me on the show. And anytime you guys want me back. And also, I'm going to offer up Robert Venditti, the guy that is writing Superman 78. He's a good buddy of mine and Brockton's, if you guys ever want to talk to him. I think that book just got announced. We'll get him on for you guys.
Oh, be still my beating heart, sir.
But rock, man.
But Venditti's a talker. Watch out. If Brockton and I talk, Venditti is twice as talkative. So yeah, you're gonna have your hands full. He's a great guy.
Well, awesome. Hey, Dave, man, this was so fun. Like, you're awesome. Thank you so much. We appreciate you.
Thanks, guys. And hey, we'll catch up down the road. Hopefully, we'll be able to get some con time in. Like, eventually, we'll meet up at a con. It'll be good.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes,
sir. Hopefully, sooner than later.
Sooner than later.
Okay. I was just going to say, where can people find you on the internet?
You can find my webcomic Mind Palace at mindpalacecomic.com. You can just find me at Dave DeWanch everywhere on the internet. Like, in places you don't want to find me, just at Dave DeWanch, you'll find me.
I was also just going to say, if you wanted to throw something out there for Brockton.
Oh, and Brockton is just literally, we are like the most uncreative people on the planet. He's just at Brockton McKinney everywhere online too. So super easy to find us. Look for Jenny in April, and then The Broken Circle. Like we said, it's wrapping up, but that'll be probably out. I want to say we're going to have it done by July or August of this year. So everyone that gets the Kickstarter is going to get it before anyone in stores. And we're thinking it'll probably be out in October. We like to do Halloween releases with our horror stuff. Nice. So it'll probably be out at that point. But yeah, if you want advanced copies, just go to that Kickstarter.
Indeed.
Cool. Yes. Awesome. But
lots of exciting things.
All right. I'll catch up with you guys down the road. And this has been awesome. And we'll do it again. Oh, we're going to do it again now when we do Terror Assaulter. So yeah. It'll be like a class reunion, but with a book report.
You'll get to meet the other boys too. It's like the only time we haven't had them on. It was just a random thing that they,
Well, I can't wait to meet those guys. And hey, we'll catch up down the road, and you guys have a good night. All right.
You too, man. Get out of here. Right. We appreciate it.
Thanks,
guys.
It was
great meeting you, dude.
Hey, great meeting you guys. Bye.
Bye. Jack, where can they find you and your solid beats at, buddy?
Hey, you can find me at sin_aesthetics on Twitter or sin aesthetic on SoundCloud for my fire beats. And where can we find you and your wild in reviews?
You can find me on Twitter and Instagram at BTMorgan85. You can find the podcast on Twitter at OutsideThe, and instead of an O, it's a zero. And as always, we like to remind everybody to be good to each other, be good to yourselves, and as always, turn the page and wash your hands.